Hi there, I'm Amy Griffiths and I'm one of the journalists in Manx Radio's newsroom and you're listening to Newscast.
I'm Graham McCool, I'm a retired GP and I'm a founder of Manx Duty of Care, a group of health and social care professionals who have been opposing this assisted dying bill in the Isle of Man. Well, we wanted an independent legal opinion as to whether the proposed amendments to the Assisted Dying Bill would satisfy the European Convention of Human Rights. That was our main question to them. And they think it probably will not satisfy that convention of basic human rights. And so therefore we think it could be open to challenge.
And what are the consequences of not meeting the ECHR?
The consequences are the vulnerability. One thing is, in assisted dying in Europe, as we understand it, it is not government employees who provide the service. And so there is the concern that under our bill, it will be government employees. And because they work for the government, there's the risks that they may have undue influence on the decision. I suppose that's the key thing. And so that's one reason why we think it may well not comply with the convention, as I understand it.
And there were concerns that were raised by the Ministry of Justice. That's why they said that they weren't going to then recommend that the bill goes through for royal assent at this stage. But the mover of the bill, Dr. Alex Allenson, is making some amendments. What do you think that they will go far enough to make this legislation meet those requirements?
We think that the amendments that have been drafted have many loopholes and are not consistent. If I can give you an example, so two doctors will assess the patient, an assessing doctor and an independent doctor. And if one of them has doubts about the capacity of the patient, they can refer to a psychiatrist or an expert in capacity. Anyway, the psychiatrist then will presumably examine the patient and decide perhaps they don't have capacity and can express those concerns to the independent doctor. But the independent doctor can completely ignore those concerns. And the independent doctor is under no obligation to even say to the other doctor that he had doubts or she had doubts and referred to the psychiatrist. So we have a strange situation here where there's no compulsion on openness between those three professionals. So this is very strange and would be worrying. So that's an example of a loophole in the legislation, which isn't on the face of the bill. If I can just give you an example about a bill, we have a very good bill, the Mental Health Act 1998, 149 pages of detail, which has subsequently been amended, which provides for the compulsory detention of those with severe mental illness. And it's well understood by the medical profession, and it's served us well over the years. But this bill is only 19 pages long. It's so brief. You know, a huge amount of detail should be on the face of the bill to ensure safety. Leaving it all to secondary legislation and codes of conduct is a mistake. It needs a thorough thrashing out so that we really know what we're getting into, where all this will happen, the costs, and so forth.
And I do understand those concerns, but ultimately that is the way that Manx legislation is enacted. That is the way that our parliament works. And so why should this law be treated in any other way to any other Manx law that we have?
Well, let's immediately say this law is not being treated in any other way because it is extraordinarily being brought. These complicated amendments are being brought to Tynwald, which is strictly legal because technical amendments have been brought to Tynwald before. But this is not going through the usual process through keys, detailed examination, clause by clause with amendments. No amendments can be added to this in Tynwald, as I understand it. So it's this is actually a real change to our normal democratic process because of the rush to try and get it through before the end of the session. So that's also a concern.
And the thing is reading the letter, it does come across that the main reason why you're enacting or sort of instructing these lawyers is because you yourself are against assisted dying and don't agree with it as a concept.
Yes.
And, you know, would you be having the same concerns about the bill were you in favour of assisted dying?
I think the key thing of the democratic process, which I think is tremendous, is that we can have a friendly argument with each other about what makes something really safe. And so you need, in a sense, you need both sides of the argument. Otherwise, we're going to end up with ultimately end up as rubbish. So we respect the democratic process, but we need to have these arguments with each other so that we can get the best outcome for everybody. And clearly what we want is we're all concerned with safety. We're all concerned with compassion at the end of life. And we're all concerned that people have real choice. And we have this problem that a hospice is making people redundant because of lack of funding. Desperately need at least 50% of core funding to be met by government. And that wouldn't be hugely expensive in the scale of things, in the scale of health service expenditure. So we're losing choice at the moment for what has been a really good palliative care service and could be better. And of course, we really appreciate some people have had horrendous experiences, in the past, but they are the vast minority. Most people on the Isle of Man, read those obituary columns, have a peaceful death, and death is well managed. But that's not absolutely always the case, and we could do better, and palliative care could do better. But we're worried about the risks, you know, of relieving suffering for a few at the very end of life to this bill, which could shorten lives dramatically. A year prognosis when somebody's completely well, they could have an assisted death. So we could have dramatic shortening of life. We could have wrong prognoses. We could have the situation where doctors don't want to come to the Isle of Man or even leave the Isle of Man. So we could lose good doctors. We could gain doctors who want to, who are interested in polishing people off, quite honestly. Are we going to be safe? So, you know, the whole safety, the whole health service, is this going to be good for the Isle of Man or not? So we just think there are risks for the reputation of the Isle of Man. We think there are risks for our healthcare. There are pharmacological risks. No, none of these medications have been researched, you know, around the world. Nothing has a license for this. There are different regimens used around the world. So there's huge concerns about that. So, yeah, we need to have these arguments so that we come and clearly, you know, the will of the majority members of House of Keys is in favour of the principle of assisted dying, but the devil is in the detail.
And within the letter that you say that the legal proceedings that you anticipate you might need to take will very much depend on what happens over the next couple of months. But if the law, if the legislation gets the backing of Tynwald, then goes back to the UK Ministry of Justice, gets approval from them, then gets its royal assent, surely by that point it's gone through enough scrutiny to make sure it's complying with the relevant laws that are in place. So why is it that at that point you then think that you would take legal action?
Oh, that's a great question. And the reason is that that we would still consider it is because a lot of these principles under the European Convention of Human Rights in relation to assisted suicide have not been tested in court. So there is therefore a real impulse, a need for the whole of Europe. France has just rejected assisted dying. Scotland's rejected assisted dying. The UK has also, as we know, that bill is going to come back now, the UK bill, which also probably doesn't conform in the same way that the Manx one does. There's the Jersey bill, which also possibly doesn't conform in the same way that the Manx one doesn't conform. So, there's going to be a challenge. Very likely be a challenge in the European Court of Human Rights to really clarify for the whole of Europe what is safe, what isn't safe. I suppose the question is, which jurisdiction wants to go to court?
And you would argue, hopefully not the Isle of Man.
Hopefully not the Isle of Man.
But you think it could?
Not impossible.
Mm. Within the letter, you're also calling for more transparency around the decision-making process. What exactly is it that you would like to see? What do you think's not been made publicly available?
We have a summary of the objections of the Ministry of Justice, but of course we don't have the detail. And I think neither to Tynwald members. So there is a concern there that some of the detailed objections from the Ministry of Justice perhaps, you know, hasn't been made clear to us. We're working slightly in the fog here, probably all of us are. So we are reassured by Dr. Arnson that his amendments will be adequate, but then again, we see loopholes in his amendments, so we're not sure that they are adequate for purpose. And of course, as I've said before, we think that should an assisted dying service happen on the Isle of Man, it would be far, far safer for it to be totally outside the health service.
So you think it should be a private company almost run, sort of running its own assisted death practice,
almost.
A bit like kind of Dignitas almost, but
yeah, or like the hospice, you know, a standalone charity, you know, perhaps, yeah, maybe something else. I mean, Dignitas certainly has its problems too, doesn't it? But at least doctors in Switzerland don't have to even think about or this subject.
So I guess what situation then would you find yourself happy with, where you feel like you're not having to take any legal action any further?
That's a good question. I think there's going to be, until it's clear that until it's clear that the European Court agrees with the Isle of Man, at that point, I think we would be, you know, obviously we've reached the end of the road, haven't we? The courts are the final arbiter of that. Although, of course, we could still campaign if we think it's unsafe to have the law repealed. But that's a long way down the road, isn't it? And that might come with some very bitter experience, you know. They're having to step back from some of the things in Canada. One or two of the states are stepping back from their assisted dying service because of what they've found. The grief of families to discover that a loved one who they thought was doing okay has suddenly elected to have their life ended, and the first thing they know is that their relative is dead, is so traumatic. And I have a medical colleagues in Canada who are facing this with patients' relatives. They're big issues. Even in the Mental Health Act, you know, of course, psychiatrists involve the families and the witnesses for evidence around the person's, well-being. So it's very isolating, potentially very isolating for somebody who have total autonomy and to go, and for the doctors not to be able to breach the confidence to check what's going on. Very tricky. It is very tricky. We are dependent on each other, and we're part of community. You know, this is hyper-individualism that can potentially create immense pain. Not for everybody, but yeah.
Although I suppose playing devil's advocate, isn't that individual's choice?
Yes, it is choice. But it's, of course, the other question that the Ministry of Justice raised was concerns around coercion training and all those sort of issues. And of course, that is a really tricky area. Undue influence, it's also subtle self-coercion. This is another really, really tricky area. And I was just reading today stories of people who are glad that they didn't have assisted dying available because they feel they would have taken it and they're still alive years later when they were their wit's end with a terminal diagnosis, which turned out to be not terminal. We would be forcing a choice. Interestingly, we would be forcing a choice on people that they don't have at the moment. So that's an interesting thing. Some people want that choice. Other people actually don't want the choice or in retrospect are grateful that they didn't have it. So that's an interesting aspect to it too. I think the key the key message, actually, of this. It's an opportunity. It's the positive message. This is an opportunity for us to realize that we really treasure our hospice. And let's try and get to that 50% core funding. That would be tremendous and secure our hospice for the next few years.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.